We've all heard about the horrendous Manchester attack, the suicide bomber in Manchester, England. And it's awful looking at those beautiful, innocent faces of the children who were killed. But what else does this mean for you? That's what we're going to be talking about today. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist, and your terrorist therapist. I'm here to help you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. Well, we have been inundated with media reports about the May 22nd bombing in Manchester, England. It happened at the exit of the concert by the American singer Ariana Grande. The terrorist was waiting at the exit, and the exit which was connected to the trains and the tube. And when people started to come out of the concert, he released his bomb. And he was killed, as well as 22 other people, as well as having injured at least around 120. You know, the figures for the injured and the dead aren't permanent yet, because there are still people fighting for their lives in the hospital nearby. Well, the name of the attacker was Salman Abidi. He's 22 years old. He was born and raised in England. You know, just like in America, when we feel particularly cheated or betrayed by people who are born and raised in America and have had the opportunities here, and then they become terrorists. It's such a betrayal, such a how could they do this kind of feeling. It's the same thing in England. He comes from a Libyan family, and he was raised in an area in England, in Manchester, where it was a poor neighborhood. You know, this is what happens, actually, not just in England. Really, it happens all over, that immigrants coming from countries where there is a terrorist influence, or not, just coming from countries in general, where they end up in a poor neighborhood, it's easy for people to become angry at America or at England or wherever they are. Or same thing happens in Belgium, same thing happens in France, that these terrorists, many of the terrorists who created attacks that we have heard about in the news, have grown up feeling angry and vulnerable to being radicalized by terrorists, because they feel cheated. They feel that somehow they weren't able to get a life that was promised to them. I mean, you know, no life is promised to anybody. You have the opportunities in each of these countries. There are opportunities. And if you don't take advantage of them or work hard enough to see your rewards, then it is not the country's fault. And yet, it is very easy to find people in, especially in these particular neighborhoods. And it has been said that Salman Abidi grew up, a lot of the friends that he grew up with in his neighborhood have become terrorists, have become, well, not, some of them have gone to the Middle East and have actually joined ISIS. And then now they're doing an investigation. They've already arrested his father and a brother of his in England and a brother of his in Libya. His father is in Libya. They went back. The family came to the UK and then stayed there for 25 years and then went back. His parents went back to Libya. And what's interesting, actually, is that just some weeks before the attack at the Manchester arena, just a few weeks before, his father took him and his other brother back to Libya, supposedly because they were afraid of getting killed in an attack. They got involved with gangs, or there were gangs nearby, and they were either afraid of getting attacked themselves, or the father was afraid that they were going to attack people with knives. I don't know. That story sounds a little fishy, quite frankly, especially since if you haven't seen this already, you might look on the internet and see an interview with the suicide bomber's father, who talks about his son as though he had no awareness of this horrible, horrible attack that his son committed. I mean, he's talking as if he's talking about the weather. And of course, he was arrested, as I said, along with the two other brothers, because there are already findings that the father was a terrorist sympathizer, that the younger brother knew what Salman was going to do. He knew about the attack planned at the Manchester Arena. And then the other brother, who was still in England, he, you know, obviously, chances are that he knew something about it too, or that he had been radicalized. So this is all, these investigations are all still being conducted. But what they are saying is that it's not likely that he was a lone wolf, because the bomb that he had was too sophisticated for it to have been just him who did it. Now, talking about taking advantage of opportunities in the country that you're in, he did go to college for 2 years, but then he dropped out. And there is some thought that maybe he traveled to the Middle East and received training there, although that hasn't been proven 100% yet. But certainly in Libya, there are ISIS and Al-Qaeda cells, terrorists who are trying to recruit people as well. So one of the things that I find really scary is that when his parents were in the UK, his father worked in airport security in England. In airport security. I mean, this is exactly the kinds of things that we're worried about. Terrorists infiltrating important positions like airport security. How can we have airport security if the person who's supposed to be keeping the security actually has terrorist leanings? So when his parents, Salman's parents, took him and his younger brother back to Libya just recently, his father took away their passports, and Salman convinced his mother, lied to his mother, geez, surprise, surprise, lied to his mother and said that he wanted his passport back because he was going to go to Mecca on an Islamic pilgrimage, and instead he went back to the UK. Now, there have been some photos of Salman from his childhood posted on the internet, where you can see just from looking at him, even when he's young, there's a kind of look in his eye where he's angry, he's cynical, he's looking at the camera, his eyes, his face is kind of screwed up, like, you know, his eyes are looking like very suspiciously at the camera. And some of the people, some of his friends in the photo also, now I don't know specifically whether the specific friends in the specific photos that I looked at are the ones who were arrested or who they're investigating. But I did think to myself when I saw the photos that they also look angry and rebellious. And I would not be surprised if they are some of the ones currently being investigated. He was also described as having a face of hate, and that's how I would describe the pictures that I saw of him in his childhood. But he was described literally with those words, face of hate, by an imam from a mosque that he attended. An imam. He went to a mosque at least one, perhaps more than one, where he was thrown out. And which one, we have to give credit to the mosque, you know, where credit is due, because he was thrown out because when they were talking about radical Islamists in a negative way at the mosque, you know, they were distancing themselves from that way of thinking. Salman got angry, and he did sympathize with the radical Islamists, and so he was angry that they were talking against them at the mosque. And when they noticed this, they contacted the authorities to warn them about him. And there are also reports that people from the neighborhood called the authorities, and even people from his family, supposedly. But right now, I don't know that it was his immediate family, because right now it seems like they are covering him and trying to say, I mean, the father tried to say that there's no way it was him, even after he was dead in the bomb blast and they identified him. So I don't know that it was really his immediate family who contacted. But the point is that the authorities were warned. And I talk about this in pretty much in most, if not all, of the terrorists of the recent attacks that have made big news, that in fact these people were on a watch list of sorts, but then the authorities stopped watching them or weren't watching them closely enough to begin with. I mean, it's especially true, it seems to me, with Salman Abidi, because as they're doing more investigation, they're finding out that he is linked to a larger cell. And so certainly if they had been watching him more carefully, they would have also found these links to other wannabe or soon to be terrorist attackers. So there needs to be more people and a more serious way of looking, keeping track of all of these people instead of just, you know, too quickly taking them, stop watching them, stopping paying enough attention to them. And in America, in any case, I think it's more in America than in England, but in America, there's so much political correctness that enters into it that I think that people get rights more than they deserve and more, where we don't recognize things before they happen, where, you know, we should realize, take people more seriously, not give them as much of the benefit of the doubt as apparently they have been getting all over. Now, supposedly, Salman was angry that in trying to explain why he did this, aside from just generally that he was radicalized, his family tries to give excuses by saying that he was angry at the killing of the Syrian children. He was angry at the way the Libyans were treated in the UK. And particularly, he had a friend who was killed in a hate crime, what he called a hate crime. This friend was fairly recently, this friend was run over and stabbed. And this goes to part of why he's angry at the UK for how they're treating people from Libya. Now, there were also warnings just soon before the attack. Neighbors were saying that he was yelling prayers loudly in the street. They were noticing him just in the days before the attack. And, perhaps these are the ones who had called the authorities. There were other warnings that were unheeded. In addition to the chanting the prayers loudly in the streets, I mean, what else do you have to do? Again, political correctness. Yes, you know, we should be allowed to say our prayers in the street, but they reported that he seemed very strange when he was doing this. It wasn't just somebody quietly saying their prayers. It was sort of a foreboding way of doing that. another warning that was unheeded, and this is really unbelievable. Apparently, there were ISIS tweets that mentioned the Manchester Arena. So in other words, on Twitter, there was the hashtag for ISIS and the hashtag Manchester Arena just hours before the attack. Now, one has to wonder why that wasn't picked up. I mean, isn't there, who's watching Twitter? Why isn't someone, you know, from Homeland Security or the British equivalent watching these things? Now, on a positive side, I do want to mention there were two homeless men that are the antithesis of terrorists, the antithesis of Salman Abedi and the antithesis of terrorists in general. And these were two men, Chris Parker and Stephen Jones. Chris Parker had gone to the Manchester Arena because he figured that this was a good place to panhandle. There would be a lot of people coming out. It would be people who had enough money to buy the ticket to Ariana Grande. You know, this would be a good place to stand with your cup. And Stephen Jones, also homeless, he went there. He found a place nearby to sleep. And as soon as the bomb went off, both of these men unthinkingly, without hesitation, ran to the victims and tried to help the victims. One of them comforted a girl who lost her legs. He wrapped her in a t-shirt and cradled a dying woman. Another one cradled a dying woman in his arms, or both of them. They pulled nails out of children's arms and faces. They did all of these. They did whatever they could do to try to comfort and help the victims. And they asked one girl, he said, "Where's your mom and daddy?" And she said, "My dad is at work, my mom is up there." Now, I think she meant, it's unclear whether she meant up there in heaven or up there in an area of the arena, but I tend to think she meant in heaven. So there are fundraising pages that were set up for them. You can look that up. Again, the names are Chris Parker and Stephen Jones. And that, you know, it's so, in the midst of all this horror and inhumanity, it is so beautiful to be able to see that there are still people, lots of them, more of us than the terrorists, who will go in, risk their lives, because they didn't know if there were other bombs that were going to go off. So they risked their lives by running into the arena and trying to help and comfort people. Now, one of the things I want to point out as far as how this is affecting us or how it should be affecting us is that it should be a wake-up call for parents, because the more terrorist attacks there are, and they are certainly coming fast and furious, the more it should be telling parents that they need to talk about terrorism with their children. So if you are a parent, or you have children that you care about, you need to realize this is a perfect example of why you need to be talking to your kids about terrorism. Ariana Grande is very popular, and when kids hear her name on television, the radio, on the internet, whenever they, you know, maybe you can try to protect them from other terror attacks, you know, from watching, like I know a lot of parents go to their television set when something about terrorism is on, they run up and they turn it off or switch to another channel. And to protect their children, they think that's what they're doing, when really it's causing children to be very confused and not get their questions answered. But here's a specific example of where you know that kids are going to want to hear what's happening with Ariana Grande. Did she get hurt? What's a terror attack? What's a terrorist? What's going on? Why would then seeing all the pictures, you know, especially the pictures of the children that are all over the place, the victims, the children who were killed, these beautiful, innocent children. Certainly, I'm sure you saw them. They are all over the television, all over the internet. Whenever there's a child who is involved in a terrorist attack, children pay particular attention. So here we have children's beautiful, sad, you know, well, they actually were happy pictures, but now it's sad to know that these are the victims. But so when the children see pictures of children like that, or they hear the name Ariana Grande, they are going to perk up and listen and want to know what's going on with these people. They especially identify with kids when there are kids involved who are victims of terrorist attacks, just like with the Boston bombing, there was a little boy who was killed. And that draws children's attention because they relate to that. They identify with that. They think, you know, that could be me. So it is especially important to talk about terrorism before you actually are faced with it in something like this. Here you have, you know, whether it's they see the faces of the children, they see her, Ariana Grande, you know, it's an attack, it's sudden, it comes without any warning to anybody, of course, and it comes without any warning to a parent as far as, oh, this is a day when I should talk to my children about terrorism, or really should have talked to my children about terrorism before this, because it's not just the media, all these terrorist attacks which are happening more and more, but it's also when kids go to school, they talk with other kids. You know, if you don't talk with your children about terrorism, I can assure you that other kids in school are talking to your kid about terrorism, and what they know and understand is most likely to be not true, confusing, worse maybe than it is, or totally, in any case, totally, total misinformation. And it's very scary because, you know how kids are, like when they want to show off that they know something and they want to scare other kids, and they make it even worse. And then, of course, there are older siblings of your child, perhaps, or of these other children in school, and they give them information too. So who would you rather your child get this information from? You? Or be confused by the TV, be confused and more scared by their friends and siblings? Of course, it's more important that it comes out in a way that doesn't scare the pants off of them, and that's done in a calm, little by little way, appropriate to their age, like you, like only you could. You know, they really want to hear things from their parent. That's who they trust the most. So now if you're telling them, oh, don't worry about it, or no, that wasn't a terrorist attack, or no, nothing happened in England, nothing happened to, Ariana Grande, actually, nothing did happen literally to her, but except that, you know, of course, the whole thing, I'm sure, was especially upsetting to her. But, I mean, she didn't get killed or injured. So parents are saying, you know, just like trying to downplay this, thinking they're doing the right thing, but that they're not making kids scared. But really, it's more important to explain things in the proper way. And of course, to that end, this is my passion. This is why I wrote my book, which is really going to be coming out soon, called Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's for parents and teachers and anyone who cares about kids to share with children. And the point of it is to be able to give this message to teach kids, you know, what you always wanted to know, what you always didn't want to know about terrorism, but have to know in our day today. So it's meant to make children more resilient, to empower them, to tell them things in a way that's calming and makes and give them tools to make themselves stronger in the face of ongoing terrorist threats. And so I've been asking parents about what they have they talked to their kids about terrorism, and how old are their kids, and so far, pretty much all of the parents that I have asked about this have reacted in the same way. They look sheepish, embarrassed, and they say, "Well, this is no matter how old their kids are." Well, no, I haven't actually talked about terrorism with them. I mean, you know, no, I don't want to scare them, or I don't want to have to tell them about these horrible things. Well, yeah, none of us do. We don't want to hear about these things ourselves. But this is a sad reality of our world that isn't going to be stopped anytime soon. Hopefully it will be stopped at some point, but not within, you know, I'm not a psychic, but certainly the point is that these things are happening now, and kids are wondering about them now, and they are scared about them now. And to take the approach, well, I'm going to wait until my child ask me about terrorism before I talk to them about it, is the wrong approach, because kids are scared to ask their parents because they're scared of you know what they've seen. The parents also, you may not realize it, but you may be giving off the message that you don't want them to talk to you about it. Kids are so good at picking up on that. They may have overheard a conversation that you had. So you cannot just wait for them to ask. This is, you know, this kind of a concert with, let's say they know who Ariana Grande is and they're a fan of hers and all. This is a perfect teachable moment to start the discussion, start the talk if you haven't started it already. And in my book, I will be helping you to do just that. The first part of it is for adults, grown-ups, and the second part is a picture book, a children's picture book. Which is directed, a book that talks directly to the children. So, well, why don't we go now to the letter portion of the terrorist therapist show. And I have a letter, an email from Amanda. Again, I will tell you, I want to remind you how to contact me and send me your questions, your comments, suggestions that you have for future podcasts. And you can do that by going to my Facebook page by putting in the terrorist therapist, and you will come to my page, or going to my website, terroristtherapist.com. And you can either send me a message on my Facebook page or click on the contact page for the website. This is a message from Amanda from Long Island, New York. And she wrote, "My kids love to go to concerts, and I know there are several of their favorite stars coming to our city this summer, but I'm afraid to let them go after what happened in Manchester at the concert. They will be crushed. Should I let them go?" Well, I know this is a problem that parents are facing all over the world. And I think in America, we in America are in a little more in denial, and it's understandable because, you know, people in England, for example, have had more terror attacks, especially recently. People in France have had more terror attacks, especially recently, even in Belgium. So they are, it's a little harder for people in countries where there have been these attacks recently to be in denial. But in America, we're more in denial. So I think we will be more likely actually to, on the whole, to think it's okay. But this is, I do think it's okay. I don't think that you or your children should stop going to concerts or any other kinds of activities where there have been terror attacks in the past. But there are some precautions that you can take. And here are some of the precautions. If you, first of all, you need to, don't ever, ever, ever send your children alone. Even if they're, you know, 17 or 18, you don't think of them as children per se, little children. Still, go with them to concerts. If you're taking their friends, make sure that the parents, at least one parent of the, each friend, it comes along as well. Because if there is an incident of some sort and everybody panics, you need a parent with a child, with each child. Then make sure that your children have cell phones and that ICE, the word, the letters ICE, which stands for in case of emergency, have that programmed into automatic dial in your phone and have it go to an adult family member who will be able to come to help them, whatever kind of incident there is. And then, of course, tell your children to look for the nearest exit once they arrive at their seat, so that they know where to run quickly if an incident occurs. And of course, that goes for you, for adults as well. We should all, even when we go to movie theaters, we should, wherever we go, a sporting event, when we get to our seat, the first thing that we should do is to look to see where the nearest exit is. Yes, that's very sad. It totally sucks, but that could save our life and our children's lives. So what's the answer? The answer is that we can't stop going places. If we're going to say that we can't go to concerts because it's too dangerous, or we're going to tell our children that they can't go to concerts because it's too dangerous, or we then where do you stop? Not going to sporting events, not going to movies, not going to airports, not going to train stations. I mean, these are all places where there have been terror attacks. Maybe not movies as far as ISIS kinds of terrorists, but certainly there was the attack in Colorado. But, you know, that is a target. That is a potential target, certainly, because there are a lot of people sitting in a movie theater. So where does it stop? You can't, it would never stop. What about going to sidewalks? You wouldn't want to even walk on the sidewalk if you're going to use that way of thinking and trying to not be anywhere that a terrorist attack might be or might have been in the past. So we can't let the terrorists win. We have to keep living our lives and enjoying our lives, and we just have to take precautions. So thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your Terrorist Therapist.